Well, hello and welcome to what is the 113th edition of the Adoption and Fostering Podcast with me, Al Coates, and him.
Scott Cousin René.
Stupid boy. We are the decaf coffee at the all-you-can-eat breakfast buffet in the Travel Lodge, which is the adoption industry. Nobody wants decaf coffee, really.
That was very wet, and nobody wants that kind of coffee anyway, whether it's decaf or not.
No. There you go. Anyway, how are you, Scott? How the heck are you? We've had such a busy few months with podcasting, serious. So how are you?
Yes,
let's talk about you, about how you
are. No, let's not talk about me, thank you. I'd rather not, you know, just saying.
Oh, fair enough.
But yes, still here, still kicking around, you know, still surviving.
Excellent.
What was it? The other day was Groundhog Day, wasn't it? Which is quite ironic because that's exactly how it feels at the moment.
Oh, yeah.
Literally, it is Groundhog Day every day.
I'm lost. I'm adrift in my calendar and my routines of all of my adult life. I had a bizarre incident this week, I must confess. I was sat at my tippy-tapping at my computer, tippy-tapping, and then I saw a little sheep's head appear over the hedge, only not but 15 feet from where I was sat. And then I looked again and said sheep had brought forth itself into my garden, so there was a sheep in my garden. It was just... And then there was just lots of... It was like, I'm a social worker, there's a sheep, I'm... meant to be doing social work and there's a sheep, and so there was a great
you have such a diverse life with all the action that happened in that so, part of
so
your
we
world.
So we called for an emergency sheepdog who came and resolved the issue for us, which is really what we did. We called and a sheepdog came.
So is there emergency sheepdogs in your area? Have a number, is it like 999? Which service do you
sheepdog? Right, he'll be on his way. He arrived with a little blue light on his head. Bless him.
I'm sure everybody enjoyed actually having a sheep in the garden. They must have done. Hilarity must have ensued.
High point of lockdown 3, definitely. And the sheepdog is actually called Jill. She's very nice. But she's not. She's not very sociable. Fond of people. But anyway, that's enough of Jill. And my dog. You can see my dog was thinking, where can I get some mint sauce at this time of day? And she was Esther was very like, let's play a game. And she wouldn't come out of the garden once we got rid of it because there was just too many new smells.
Yes.
Major incident.
See, if it was my dog, he would have just been looking for sheep droppings. Because that's what he does.
Dogs are disgusting. Dogs are disgusting.
Yeah. I won't tell you what he does with the kittens later today.
Oh,
let's not go there.
Don't go there. Little poo nibbles. Anyway. Yeah. Oh, you've
Scooby snacks.
Funny.
We like to call them. We do. We call them Scooby snacks. We have a. See, you. Now you've just reminded me. This is quite funny, actually. If you just put your gag reflex back in for a minute. Because we have a stair gate between the kitchen and the rest of the house because the dog is allergic to carpets, believe it or not. So he stays in the kitchen.
Your dog's allergic.
Tile floor. Yeah, he is. Man-made fibres, just bring him out in hives.
Well, stop. Don't go into any more of the story. Stop right there. What the hell's that all about? How do you work that out?
It's just such a... I don't know. Anyway,
he fits in your family, doesn't he?
Yeah, he does, doesn't he? We are all just bonkers. So we have a cat. We do have a stair gate between the kitchen and the rest of the house. And if he manages to get through the stair gate, and he's worked out how to do it as well, because the stair gate is like a bit old and it's a bit tarred and stuff, so the button doesn't work correctly. Anyway, he's managed to work out. So every so often, because I use the wood pellet. litter for the kitten because it covers the smells up and all that sort of stuff, and every so often you just see him wandering back through to the kitchen with sawdust all over him. Just like filthy. His nose is just covered in sawdust, and I just think, oh, okay, I don't have to clean the cat litter tray out today. And he's had his little Scooby snacks, so yeah, that's our dog. I mean, he stops by the cat food on the way, you know, he'll sit and he'll munch on the biscuits or the meat or whatever else. Oh, but yeah, he's just a filthy pig.
Well, no wonder he's got allergies. Bless him.
Well, I mean, yeah, but apparently there's a lot of nutrients in it.
Oh, well, yeah.
For a dog that's allergic to everything.
Oh, Dave. I mean, the infamous fat Dave. He'll eat anything. He's a filthy... Yeah. You can see him. He comes out. He's got a little cigar out with the cat little tray. And he's like, wow. My wife went to the West Indies and do you make her? He's doing his little Groucho Marx impression. Little filthy creature. Anyway, we are so off the beaten track. So off the beaten track.
Yes, but, you know. There you go.
Tell me about you've been beavering away in the admin halls of the podcast of Podcast Towers. You've been chained in admin halls until you rustled up some guests. So you've rustled up a guest, and you need to come on sell this guest to us.
Yeah, well, we've got a friend of the show and potentially all time highest downloaded show actually for episode 10.
Yeah.
So we're now on episode 113. She came on in episode 10. So I've had to pull her. I've literally had to lasso her into coming on again.
We've had lawyers involved. Everything.
Yeah, she is. She's just amazing, but she gets very nervous about doing things like that. But we've Dr. Marie Kershaw is coming back on the podcast.
Excellent.
And we're going to do a very special Ask the Psychologist. I had a long chat. Yeah, we're going to have a clinic. It is a proper clinic.
Wow.
It's not going to be a live clinic, just to be clear, listeners. So you're not going to be able to ring in because we don't have, well, we're not, yeah, we probably could use that technology, but we're not, you know, it would just go on for hours, wouldn't it? But essentially, given everything that's gone on in the last year, we thought it'd be a really good idea to invite Marie on. And Marie works in Birmingham Children's Trust, and she used to work solely in adoption, but she now covers the whole of Birmingham Children's Trust. So she's really like making a mark on what it is that she's trying to do. And basically, you can ask her anything you want, and if she has an answer, she will give us an answer when we speak to her next month. Now, the reason we've delayed it is because we need questions. We need questions.
Good ones.
And we don't want them put on social media because that's just then the temptation is for Marie to reply.
people waiting.
Get panicked. Exactly. So what we're asking is if we want them on email, and we need them before so that she can actually, because there will be some stuff she doesn't know. She's admitted herself. She's not like, you know, she doesn't know absolutely blimmin' everything.
She'll give it a crack. So I tell you what, if she can't answer it, I'll answer it.
Well, I prefer it if she answered it. God, not going to be honest.
It'd
not going to lie.
It'd be fine.
So, I said this. When did I say this to somebody the other day that we don't have insurance because we're not like that? And I could really do without that sort of stress in my life. Not going to lie. So,
I have insurance.
Well, good for you.
I have professional indemnity insurance because I work as an independent social worker. So I've got.
Yes, of course you do. Yeah,
I've got people who've got my back. I've got access to lawyers and all sorts of things.
I could have put a claim in a couple of times then. Damn. Wish I'd known. So we're going to be talking to Marie on the 9th of March. So we would love it if you've got any questions for us. So it is a literal Ask Psychologist surgery 9th of March, but we need your questions by the 2nd of March. So 2nd of March is the deadline. It's just so that we can get them to Marie and she could do a little bit of work now, and she could maybe even speak to colleagues if she's not 100% sure. But if Marie's going to answer it, she will give you the answer that you need. And if she can't answer it, she will be very honest and she'll say, look, I can't answer it. It's just that black.
And I'll answer it.
Yeah. Other services are available, like CAMS and psychologists elsewhere, and straitjackets and things.
The internet. How do we get in touch? How do you send the individual?
Well,
come on,
I was
going to
say the email address will be on this episode, but email address is aandf, so that aandf podcast@gmail.com by the 2nd of March.
Would we accept DM'd messages? Would we?
Yes, we'll accept direct messages and Facebook messages and things like that. But it's just really
not Insta. Please don't Insta messages because we don't understand how it works.
Well, it's not even that, is it? It's about like we go in now and again, and then we're like, oh, we've got 50 messages, and most of them are spam. Let's face it. You know,
I
keep on getting tagged in these weird things, weird and wonderful things.
I genuinely don't know what's going on. It's like this other world. Mm-hmm. And so please don't, if you want to get in touch with us, don't use Instagram because we literally don't know what we're doing.
It's not that we don't want you to get in touch with us on Instagram. It's just we're just so rarely on there because Instagram is a completely different platform. We're old style, aren't we? Let's face it. You know, we're old style. We like to be able to do it live on Twitter. And
everyone's happy Facebook on Instagram. We just don't fit in.
Well, that's the other thing. Yeah, we really don't fit in. I mean, we're happy people, but we really don't fit in. Yeah, and I think that Instagram is actually quite responsible for some of the upcoming topics that we're going to be discussing as well, because some of the stuff on Instagram, I mean, if you are an Instagram user, pop over to Twitter and see what people who've done it actually think.
I tell you what, here's a
not to put just, you off, but you know,
here's an experiment. Put a picture of your child on Twitter and see what happens.
Yeah, see what happens. Yeah, exactly.
Pitchforks, yeah. Torches, mobs. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Lynchings. Mm-hmm. No, that's a terrible. I'm not saying.
Yeah, but I'm just saying that, you know, if you want to kind of find out, if you want to do research, then definitely do it on Twitter to get the other side of it. Because, you know, I was right. Instagram is very kind of
just a happy place.
Lovely, and, happy yeah. Place. It is. And happy place. But then Twitter used to be like that. You know, when we first started using Twitter, that was very much like that as well, wasn't it? So,
I think Twitter is still happy. I think just people are a bit more cautious. Anyway, that's a great segue into the question we posed for this week's podcast. What a segue. Seamless.
Tell you. I wouldn't go that far, but you know.
So, we were pondering what to do, and we love a good topic. And I feel like sometimes, oddly, when you look at our kind of what podcasts get downloaded the most, quite often the topic podcasts get downloaded the most. So there you go.
Which, what did?
You know, when you look at podcasts where we do topics, where we like for example, panels, or we do relationships, those podcasts get picked up. People kind of go, oh, that's something I'm interested in. Mm-hmm. Sometimes people don't necessarily know who the professionals are, so they don't necessarily flock to them the same.
Sadly not us.
well, when I say professionals, you do mean me, don't you? Because you're just a clear amateur at this. No, I shouldn't be mean. There's high levels of high jinx because we've had to suppress all our giddy foolishness because
had
of
to be
last,
very serious for the last couple of months.
Very serious. But I think that this issue of relationships is a really interesting one because I think that the issue of relationships and children, even if you take away the element of adoption, I think is a really complicated issue because I think when you look at things like parental stress scales, you know, there's lots of really good academic research about the impact of parenting on individuals, and in the mix of all that is relationships. And actually, how I constitute my family and relationships a bit odd because we always had Anne with us who was disabled. So we were never alone. There's always the three of us. But, you know, like when you think about yourself, you and Tris before children, life was different, I presume.
Yeah, hugely. Yeah, it was. And I mean, because we had the two of them on, didn't we?
Oh, yeah.
And that's kind of sparked a little bit of kind of feedback on that as well, and it was a really well received topic actually that we discussed despite our kind of panic of what they were going to say and what they did say eventually. But that aside, it kind of with this further lockdown, it kind of just it emphasizes this thing about the intensity of being a family. And you're right, before we had kids our life was very different, absolutely. You know, we didn't, you know, we worked. That's what we did. We worked and we played, and that was really it. And look at us now. We don't work.
You don't
there's
play.
There's a certain pandemic that's gotten in the way of that, and we certainly can't play because there's nowhere to go. You know, I guess with this third lockdown, it kind of just got me thinking about that kind of the intensity of relationships and how that could pan out. Add to that the ups and downs of a pandemic with adopted child or children, and kind of covering off their needs and, you know, your inabilities to be able to do the things that you want to do. And, you know, lots of it on Twitter. I read more about single parent families who've adopted than I do about couples. But what was fascinating. Well, I mean, the Twitter poll, it is a Twitter poll. It's not like, it's not any academia involved in this. It's literally
not empirical research. Yeah.
No, exactly. We're not going to be publishing it and traveling around the world to kind of promote it.
But you're open to offers.
Yeah, well, you know, always. You do only get four options on Twitter, so the fifth one had to be struck off because there was one in the kind of middle. But the question was, how has becoming a family affected your relationship? So it's not specific about COVID, but obviously, you know, we were thinking about that in terms of some of the answers. And it is quite interesting results. There was a lot of responses, actually. But in terms of the percentages, stronger together was 47.5%. Mm-hmm. It hasn't affected the relationship, in their view, 15.8%. Which is quite low, I thought. It has nearly broken us, 29.7%.
I love the answers you give people options for. I just thought that's just... It's just...
Well, it's English, isn't it? You understand.
I understand exactly what you mean.
And no longer together was 6.9%, so that was 7%. It was kind of, you're either stronger or... you know, it really hasn't, or, you know, whatever. So that was kind of the difference that I was thinking of in terms of just being in plain English. I was really surprised by how high Stronger Together was, because, or was I? And the reason I'm doubting myself now is because I would have said that as a couple, Tris and I are very much stronger together, but it has nearly broken us as well on occasion.
Both at the same time.
Well, probably, yeah, exactly, without even realizing it. And I feel really sad for the 7% as well, that, you know, they're no longer together as a family, as a you know, family of three or four or five, because, well, one of the partners, you know, is,
yeah, I'm not sure. So I read all of that, and I kind of thought to myself, it demands more questions.
Snippet. Yeah, it does. Yeah, you're right. Yeah. So I mean, like I say, it was only a Twitter poll.
Chill out.
Calm down.
Yeah. Right. Well, I thought, please, let's not go into regional stereotypes. Not again. Not since the complaint. And that reminds me. Thanks for everyone who is sending emails in generally and chatting. So really appreciate it. We've had some fantastic emails recently, and thank you so much. Anyway. I think that one of the things about adoptive families generally is that we're, as a cohort, probably a little bit older than other parents. Is that fair enough?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Maybe not for same-sex couples, but maybe for mixed-sex couples. I don't know what... I can't think of the phrase to use there. So maybe there's everyone's a little bit older. And then when you add in...
History there, yeah.
Well, yeah, just because people have maybe danced through the IVF. I mean, dance is the wrong word, but they've traversed that process, which has taken some time, which is maybe delayed when they would have got together. I did wonder as well, so I do think that that has an impact on that people have maybe been, they've sort of cemented their relationships, that there's much more togetherness. But then I did wonder what the national average is for people after couples after parenting then going on to split up. I don't know.
Well, that's true as well, isn't it? Because traditionally in the past that would have happened, wouldn't it?
Well, it's just
where people would have stayed together for the kids, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah. Is that the only reason you and Tris are staying together? Oh, the kids.
I wasn't talking about us at all, but never mind. But we had a few comments, and Emma Sutton was one of the commenters, and she said that she was wavering between it hasn't, it's stronger, and also broken. But there are a lot of factors involved, including lockdown, that mean that it's hard to decide which came first, the egg or the omelette. So, you know, she summed up, it's tough, exhausting, it hasn't changed us for sure. It has changed us, sorry, for sure. And I think that would kind of represent a lot of people, actually, that kind of comment. You know?
I do think it's odd because I struggle to put a tick next to one of them, any of them, just for me and Paula, because it's just, I think the thing I'm struggling with, I thought that I can't, if I'm being brutally honest, if I think of my life having, if I could go back and kind of like, you know, like, you know, that was that film Sliding Doors, where these two worlds go in parallel. What would have been the life if we'd had biological children versus the life we've got now? And the two lives are non-comparable in so many ways, you know, in terms of
employment. Because you'd only had one birth child and then gone, I'm not having anymore.
And you go, oh, good grief, he looks like his father. Stop. poor child. That this the impact of adoption and the specific needs of my children and then how that's played out in our lives has meant that our lives are just non-comparable. There's nothing about those two, that imagined path versus the one we've run. The two are just so diverse in that regard. And I was thinking about... I think it's made our relationship very different to how it probably would have been. I was thinking about a really long time ago when we would start to do the conversations with people, and I do this thing where I don't ask people questions. I just kind of like open it up and see where they go. And I remember one of the very first ones where, I'm not going to say who it was, people can work it out if they remember. And I asked a question like, so why do you adopt? And 15 minutes later, we were talking about the strain in the relationship. And that was like, it was just something that was so prescient, you know, talking about their relationship with their partner. And it just brought to mind all of these really complicated things. And I remember, do you remember Honor Rhodes? And that's a long time ago we had Honor on.
That is a long time, yeah.
Which is probably 4 years.
Tavistock. Relationships.
Yeah, exactly. Tavistock. Relationships, yeah. And she said this idea, she put this phrase in my head that really stuck in me, this idea that we had, you in a relationship, you sometimes have the adopter and the person who's gone along with it. And it's like awkward pause. And that because of their love or the commitment or they're just and that
I feel some
then,
blushing going on.
Awkward. But then if there's challenges and adversity in adoption, which is really, you know, which is common, that's the common path, isn't it? Adversity. There will be challenge and adversity. That then that division, the gap between the two can sometimes be unbearable.
Contained. But we did get a direct message from someone who we'll call H, because it was quite clear from my name.
All right.
But it's quite a kind of, so it just said, re your relationship Paul, you've got no chance to think about it, we have to stay together and make it work, there's no other option, swim hard or all of us sink. And I think that is kind of, you know, that's potentially the way a lot of people may have to deal with it, may see it. And again, like you said, it depends on how far into your kind of adoption journey, I hate using that word, but you know, I guess it does depend on how far or how deep or what kind of things are going on that you didn't ever think would happen, etc., etc. And it's a hard one to kind of.
Oh, I think it's when I think about the impact on relationships, I think it is, and you can see it. It's strained people, and you know, I've got friends whose lives are just. You can see their lives, they love the children, they love each other, but there's a sense of this wasn't the plan. This wasn't how going to work out. And there's often a sense of people dislocated from their communities and their families perhaps. And, you know, probably to what I've experienced is that large parts of my family think that my life is really odd. And this we see them and, you know, we get on well, but even that planned, you know, that cousins would play nicely, and that's just not necessarily part of the picture. Because some cousins would maybe destroy other cousins, you know.
The nunchuckers and the knuckle dusters and stuff. But I think there was another area of our community though that we couldn't really cover because it's about relationships between couples. But someone pointed out that they were single when they adopted and now in a relationship.
Yes.
And it kind of got me thinking about, you know, so if you are single and you have decided, you know, you've got, for whatever reason, whether it's to do with how your age or whatever, you've decided, right, okay, I'm going to adopt, and you've gone ahead and adopted. I guess it kind of that is a completely different kind of question. But what if you meet somebody? How do you meet somebody? You know, if you get to a point where you feel like you want somebody in your life to share, you know, blah blah blah. That's a big old one. And I guess for me, it's not one that I would want to take charge of finding out, because I have no personal experience of that. But it did make me wonder and think about that and think how different and difficult must it be for people who aren't in a relationship to then want that or need it, or, you know, my mind was a bit blown by that one, because I knew it was there, but I didn't expect it to be kind of pointed out that it would say.
You didn't anticipate that happening. Well, I do think it's I think it's an issue for any single parent who then goes on to sort of develop a relationship. And I think through my work, I've met quite a few foster carers who sort of have perhaps single, and there's an element of it being a choice, but stuff happens, you know, you meet people and you fall in love. Do you know what I mean? You know, I'm thinking of, I don't particularly want to name any names, but we can think of people we know who may have been on the podcast. And their life's taken a different route that they were anticipating. But that's the nature of life, isn't it? That things happen, stuff happens, and you roll with it. That's all you can do.
Yeah.
You can't do anything. I do think it's maybe, you know, but I don't recall it ever being part of... But yeah, how could you raise it in a preparation course? You know, but it's part of the assessment is to try and get a real, not stress test, but to get a real sense of it. Is this a durable relationship? It has to be. And as a social worker, I'm thinking as a social worker, it's something that we, you know, I haven't done that many. Well, I've only done one PAR. For someone, but I've done lots of Form Fs, and I think it is how do you measure someone, how do you quantify and measure someone's relationship, and how do you get the truth out of people, which is kind of stuff we've talked about before, but how do you, you know, that self-awareness, and how do you ask if something will withstand an unknown thing, because it might not happen, people, you know, things might be fine. I don't know, it's just, it seems like a black art, a lot of this stuff, but you can buy the big book of how to assess someone to be an adoptive parent from BAF if you need to.
If you're feeling brave enough.
Yeah, I'm in this, I'm in a few Facebook groups and things. I should put maybe, when people say I'm looking for literature, you know, I'm looking for recommendations for books, I thought you should just buy the BAF, the Quorum I BAF, How to Be Assessed. Just write down your own flipping answers. You go.
Yeah, so anyway, thank you to everybody who replied, because it was interesting. It wasn't, you know, it was just something that kind of flitted through my mind. And and of course, you know, there were the kind of COVID has had an impact on relationships as well. I think that was really the one that kind of made me wonder, actually. Again, that wasn't, I don't think it was a public comment, but somebody definitely said that their partner had really struggled as a result of lockdowns and, you know, the pandemic and stuff like that, and it really affected their relationship. So, you know, hopefully we will get through that sooner rather than later. But
I do think that it's just such an unquantifiable thing, isn't it, because you just don't know what life's going to throw at you. And I know that I can think of specific circumstances when we've had really difficult experiences with professionals. That's been something. I think of all of the things that it's when it's working with other professionals that have sometimes put and kind of maybe revealed those cracks or stressed those cracks beyond anything. We feel like it's got really grim now, hasn't it? We've got, it's like turned into a really grim podcast. Anyway.
You took it there. So.
It's fair enough. Anyway. Well, that's goodbye to our Instagram followers. They've all gone and gone.
Might as well just close that one down.
Yeah. Oh, bless them. I shouldn't be mean to the Instagram people because they're so sweet.
No, they are. Well, I think the point with Instagram is literally yeah, I don't know. It's just, it's a different world on Instagram. I can deal with it personally, and even then I don't post very much. You know, I think it's because it has to, well, it doesn't have to be, but it has to be images or photos, doesn't it? And I think that's the difference. I don't always have the content, you know, because I don't go around taking photos of everything every day. My phone is for communication, not for photographs.
Not for recreation.
Although I do take the odd one now and then. But you know what I'm saying? It's like, you know, yeah, it's just not, it's not the done thing for me.
A picture of you and the boy baking.
Yeah, I know, yes, all stuff. But, I mean, but I used to do that sort of stuff, but I just, you know, I just don't have the time or the energy anymore, so, yeah. You know.
I remember when I was growing up, I remember I reached a certain age and I realised that there was no photographs of me as a child. And I just realised that my parents just got bored of taking photographs of my brother because there was just 10,000 photographs of my brother. And by the time they got to me, they were just a bit over that, really. Which as a child is quite sad. But, you know, how do you think we feel with it? We're on the sixth, honestly. Bless
her. Well, that's the thing as well. That is the thing because we...
onto the sixth. Yeah. That's a terrible thing. That's how I'm going to lose my registration, isn't it? That glib comment. She does have a name and we have been feeding her.
Yeah, and you've definitely been feeding her, or you've been standing her in grow bags, considering the photograph I saw earlier, because I haven't seen her for maybe 6-7 months.
Has she grown? I haven't noticed.
She has. She's just gone whoosh. That's a very interesting point you make about that, though, because actually, you go all out, don't you?
You
do all the kind of photographer, if you can get them to sit still for a photographer, or you print stuff off and blah, blah, blah. And now I only print off what is absolutely like just, you know,
necessary.
Making sure that we've got equality in the house.
There's no sense of joy in it whatsoever. It's just a duty.
There isn't. There literally isn't. And I don't know why. I don't know why. But then I think back to, you know, my parents when they had a house, they had one photograph in the whole house that was in a frame, one photograph. And it was our, our annual school photographs of me and my brother.
Yeah.
Because we went to the same primary school.
And those that was 70s photographs of you and him in your uniforms.
80s,
oh.
80s, 80s, 80s.
70s.
Thank you. 80s. But that was it. That was all we had in the house. We had nothing else. You know, there was none of these kind of massive big B&M kind of, you know, 12,
oh, yeah.
You know, that sort of thing. That just didn't happen. So maybe that's a throwback for me. I don't know. But I like photos. You know, I like to see them around the place. I like to have them, you know, to have the canvases of the wedding and, you know, the boys and all that sort of stuff. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it's quite bizarre. But then that's technology moving on as well, isn't it, in a way? Because actually, if you want to have a look through our photos, we look through our phone now. We don't have to get a big box down out of the cupboard and go through, physically go through them. So anyway,
which is
I feel
quite
like
nice.
I'm just being an old fart now. But
well, no, it is an interesting point because we've got life story books laid around the house everywhere. Honestly, you can't move for them because of the number of children and stuff.
You've got 50 million children.
Yeah, it's literally, the house is practically built by the damn things. Of varying quality, I'll be honest as well. We had one set, we had one set of books that was given to us.
Well, the children or the life story books?
The life story books. Life story books, and we didn't show them to our kids, which is really bad practice, until they're about 7 or 8, and they went through them and they were pointing out the grammar and spelling mistakes in it, so so we just put them away because it was shoddy. But then, long story short, they got redone. But what's her face, the youngest, what's her face, she doesn't have a name. Peanut, bless her. Well, she's really quite peculiar. She insists on being called different things at different times. It's just all a bit odd. She comes in my office and sits behind me on here, and she goes through her photograph album, you know, at least 1, 2, 3, 4 times a month. Not sad, just likes looking at it. So I have been starting to put additional photographs in the back just to, you know, keepsakes, different things. So I think that having them physically is a visceral comfort kind of sensory thing, isn't it, to be able to look at photographs. So she sits there,
exactly.
And
I think you underestimate the impact that they have, actually, those books, to be perfectly honest with you,
when
and
they're done well, that,
you know. Yeah, and but also some of our children don't know, they never met their birth fathers, you know. Jacob's a prime example of that. So he is this kind of you know, he's his imagination tells him what his birth dad is like. So having a photograph of him, and I have to be honest, you know, Jacob's 50-50 in terms of his look. He looks 50% like his mum and 50% like his dad, but he takes after his dad in so many different ways. So to read about his hobbies and things like that, you know, and the fact that he loves to do that scale and build and thing, what's that called? I can't remember.
Parkour?
You know. Scaling, climbing, buildings, you know, so climbing. running, you know, the run, yeah, that, all that sort of stuff. But you know, when you run and, you know, the stuff that scares me, crapless, let's say that, it's all to do with heights and whatever it's called. I don't know. If people are writing, they'll tell us. That sort of thing. But that kind of validates
we'll ask
him.
Dr. Marie when she comes.
Yeah, she'll know. But that validates him because he wonders where he gets it from. So, that, you know, they're very useful if they're done right. You're right. And, you know, Jacob's had to be redone about 6 times. Whereas Fraser and Brandon's first time, perfect.
Boom.
But we're talking a long time ago when there was budgets for these sorts of things and he actually had a life story workers. And I think I've talked about this before.
Well, it's national minimum standards, though. I mean, it's not an option.
Yeah, but it wasn't 15 years ago, was it?
No, it wasn't. I'm trying to think when the national minimum standards came in. You talk amongst yourselves.
Yeah,
and I'll
a little Google. Yeah.
I don't know when the adoption. I'm not that familiar with the adoption national minimum standards. I sometimes read them and then and post a little bit of them on Twitter just to see if I can wind people up. Well, that's a good point. A little news item. Ofsted have sent out all their questionnaires to all the regional adoption agencies, and so we should be getting our questionnaires to complete about how Ofsted are doing. But I've not had mine. I tried to put something on the internet, but it didn't take off. I was thinking I might cause a minor riot. But I know that they've been sent out to fostering because I received them and I've sent them out to our foster carers. So that's our opportunity to do that. We should do that. So if you do get it, please do it. It takes about 3 minutes. It's fantastic if you get
that. Is this for the whole of the UK? Is it just for England? What?
Well, whoever Ofsted covers, which will be England and Wales, is it? I'm not sure.
Yeah. It's a bit rubbish, isn't it? If you're just covering 2 countries out of 4. Just saying, you know, I'm just saying for, you know, it's always that it might not be in England or Wales.
Get you with your
I'm getting
politics.
More and more about that. Seriously. No, it's not politics. It's just flipping country lines, you tulip. I'm getting more and more into this, honestly.
2011, which is the same year as so most of my children were pre 2011. Yeah, 2011. Yeah.
Well, my oldest were 2007, and I have to say that obviously that was before the kind of financial collapse in 2008-09, and their local authority actually had a life story work team,
like,
as in more than one person. And it actually had a team manager.
A crack team of life story people. That sounds fantastic.
So the quality of their life story work was just fantastic. And also, and bear in mind, we're talking a while ago now, but that life story worker was also involved in introducing them to the opportunity that you know, they might not get a mum and dad. They might be 2 mums or a mum or 1 dad or 2 dads. So there was a lot of kind of, you know, there was a lot of, I want to use the word intelligence in terms of how they used their time and how they used their money to be able to make sure that, you know, these children actually were sent off into the next stage of their life with some relative success.
Well, here you go.
But the life story books, go on.
I was going to say, the National Minimum Standards for Adoption, standard 2.5, 6 and 7, a preparation of a life story book is coordinated by one person, preferably the child's social worker. The life story book represents a realistic and honest account of the circumstances surrounding the child's adoption. Its format is appropriate to the age and understanding and accessible for use by the child. Prospective adopters are encouraged to update it as their understanding develops. The life story book is to be given to the child in stages, given to the child and prospective adopter in stages at the latest by the second statutory review of the child's placement with the prospective adopters. And within 10 days of the adoption ceremony, which I suppose is the adoption order. And that just doesn't ring true very much. But that's the standard that Ofsted will be measuring people by. But if people don't tell Ofsted, back to the Ofsted thing, then Ofsted won't be able to measure them. Because that's, Ofsted will hold the regulations, which is kind of the big stuff. But the national minimum standards will be looking at really the nuts and bolts of practice of adoption agencies. And that's kind of the Bible. That's where you go to and where you work out how you, you know, how you're going to do stuff. So there you go.
Interesting. Well, make sure you fill it in wherever you are, whether you're in Scotland or not.
Scotland. Well, if we get one.
If you get an email, fill it in, all right?
Yeah, just fill it in, Samara. Just fill it in. Anyway. All right, we're just kind of... We did have a few ideas of stuff we were going to talk about. I think that is the last one on the list. Do you want to talk about the Adoption Away Day that I was on today? Do you want to do that?
Oh, if you must, you were poncing again, weren't you? You were poncing again.
No, I'm not. I'm going to give a brief. Shall I give a little update of where? Because we're at 40 minutes.
When we say away day, we mean like a virtual away day, don't you?
It was. Yeah, I mean,
actually go anywhere.
All my life, I've been wanted to be invited to an away day for anybody, for anything, for
any reason. Are you for real? You must have done them before.
Never.
Really.
Never had an away day.
They're just the best. They are just. Yeah.
And
I
so
love away
finally
days.
Get one, and the damn thing's virtual.
It's online.
Gutted, totally gutted. So,
I'm surprised you haven't been invited to be a speaker or something like that. I mean, I've just gone because you know me. I'll go in. And when I worked at Adoption UK, when I was part of their SLT,
you'd
I used
go
to
anywhere
go to their away days and stuff like that. Yeah, CVA away day, went to one of them.
You were, oh, that's it. You came at the Northeast and you went on an away day, and I'm like 5 miles from you, and you were living at large on the flipping boat.
Yes,
eating
I was. Cocktails with Joanne Alper. What can I say? Yes. Oh, yes, we went on a river cruise.
Yeah, and I'm 3 miles away, and you're sending me pictures of you having a ruddy, great big nosh up. And then at the end of it, they said, oh, and isn't it true that at the end they said, oh, if we'd have known he was that close, he could have come. But you hadn't told them.
No, they didn't say that at all.
I'm sure they did. I'm sure. Right.
Yep. Your name was
Marie Kershaw. Marie Kershaw will know.
She wasn't there.
Yeah, but she knows everything.
No. I'll put that in a question. Wait a minute.
Yeah. Right. There's another question to ask her. Right. Right. Do Ofsted cover which countries do Ofsted cover? What year were the minimum standards put out? And why wasn't Al invited to the CVA Open Day?
Yeah, exactly.
In 19.
I think Annie Crombie would have been the person that would have had been to ask.
Oh, she'd have let me come. Yeah. Anyway, I don't know how. I can't even remember how we got to that point.
Well, you went on
away
day.
It was really interesting.
In your own home.
In my own home, yeah. My children broke in at various points. So it was the Adoption Special Guardianship Leadership Board away day. So there was quite a lot of people, and it was just kind of this idea of blue sky thinking about what, because I guess fed by the fact that Krish Kandai has just moved into the board. So it was very much I think he would be quite happy with me describing it as an ideas day, kind of looking at some of the key issues and trying to come up with kind of some inspired ideas. So I did make some notes, and there's some really good stuff. And so there's lots of people popped in, people like Andy Lee Remay was there from Linkmakers. So that was really interesting to hear from him. So you weren't there, actually, Scott. You probably noticed that. There was Beth Neal was there. There's lots of...
But I would have been there if it had been the away day, because I'd have been in entertainment in the evening for the cocktails and the wine and stuff.
You'd have been swishing around.
That, but, you know, whatever. Yeah. Anyway, off you go.
Living large. I thought it was really interesting, actually, because it was kind of focused down into a few key points, and there was a real emphasis on special guardians, which I thought was fantastic.
Yes.
And representation. Those were kind of some of the key high points. And obviously there was not a lot of solutions, and there was no kind of like, oh, we're going to do this, we're going to do that. It was more like, this is where we should be directing towards. But I think the emphasis on special guardians was just fantastic, because actually they are... The name's in the title, but it remains the kind of the... I'm trying to think of a nice way of putting it, but it remains the lesser in a lot of regards in relation to the support that's given and how it's perceived.
Yeah, they are. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's good. It made me even think about us what we even call up the podcast. Hmm. I mean, we're adoption and fostering.
Yes.
So
well,
adoption.
I mean, we have been talking about that for a while, haven't we?
Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah.
Awkward pause.
Listen, we're 5 years old this year. We might look at something. We
should have a party.
If we can afford to. Because these things cost money, you know.
We could have an away day.
Ooh. Where would we go, though?
Well, it's virtual. You can go where you want.
Distanced. Yeah, I know. Yeah, sadly. Yeah.
But that
that's not the kind of away day that I'm up for.
No, that's yeah. You might want to just give that one a miss. Stay in bed. I got stuck in it. I was going to say that the thing I found interesting was about because the adoption support fund, whether it goes on or not, no one knows, but it remains available to children who've been previously looked after in are in special guardianship arrangements and other kind of legal kind of technicalities around some of the children, but mainly that. And so I kind of put a Twitter poll out again. Look at us with our Twitter polls. asking the question that should...
Non-academic again, yeah.
Very non-academic. Do you think the name of the Adoption Support Fund should be amended to include special guardians? And overwhelmingly, 78.6% said yes. Interestingly, 12% said no. And 10% not sure.
Why would you say that? That is really interesting, actually.
Well, yeah. I wonder whether it's maybe because it's an ugly name, and there was, you know, I think there was talk about thinking of a name that maybe removed adopter and just became like a therapeutic child support fund or the therapeutic support fund, something like that.
Yeah. I guess that's the thing, isn't it? It's clunky as is the ASGLB name. You know, if you expand that out, that's why, you know, we get told off for using the acronym quite often because we don't say Adoption and Special Guardianship Leadership Board. But it's quite a clunky name. So therefore, the ASF, Adoption Support Fund, is what it says on the tin. But if you start adding that sort of stuff into it, then it does become quite clunky. And I think that if you use something like the therapeutic or, you know, whatever, it has to, I think the worry would be that, you know, you'd have all and sundry who do the, you know, who parent their children in that way, come forward going, well, can I have some money as well?
Yeah,
you know, it is a tricky one, very tricky one. But I 100% agree that the name should reflect who the offer is to. Because it's not, you know, it did start out life as just for adopters. And, you know, I'm so delighted it has been extended into special guardianship because, you know, for so long they have been the ones that are doing a hell of a lot of work. And, you know, it's a very different setup to adoption, but the need is there for the therapeutic services that they so rightly deserve. Should it be separated? I don't know. I mean, you know, if it's is it better together? I think it's probably better together because let's be perfectly frank about it. They're not going to run two or three of these funds. It's just, you know, the DfE haven't got the time nor the, you know,
the infrastructure.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's been hard enough to get this one confirmed every year. Never mind having two or three, you know, to be confirmed. So.
Especially if there's a duplication of that application process and fund managers. It was interesting to hear that not only is the challenges for... because I want, obviously the challenge is that you get a social worker who can complete the assessment and make the application for you. But for children and families in special guardianship arrangements, that there's not always an allocated social worker. There's not always a team you can go to, so you're having to go to a team that you're not that you don't have any kind of link to. So it raises a lot of questions, especially when you look at the data. The CoreMI data came out. If you can find that, I'll put a link to it, which I will not go into. But when you see that special guardianships are at least as equal to adoptions, and just that they are on the ascendancy, and adoption is almost inevitably on the decline. And I think it was interesting because there was, you know, some people were sort of acknowledging the fact that adoption is just going to go down. There's just almost nothing you can do about that, and that actually it would be what we should be an aspiration that adoption should become less and less. that, like special guardianship, it should be an aspiration that we have early intervention, that we support families better, that children don't find themselves in such dire circumstances. But there will always be a need for permanency for children. So it raises a whole host of really complicated questions. Beth Neal was, as always, absolutely fantastic. She had 4 minutes, and it was like a. I mean, I know there was lots and lots of people who were invited in to give 4 minutes on a specific issue, and so she actually came up with a couple of great quotes that I think I tweeted out. She was just to ask, like, talk this idea of, like, why are we cutting positive relationships out of children's lives? Why are we doing that? If there's a, you know, be that a foster carer, a professional, a birth family member, why are we doing that? And if there's something good in children's lives, why are we throwing it away?
Yeah.
And she was just spot on, but just raising, you know, like, lots of people asking lots of really interesting questions. Tegan, you know, Tegan, who did a.
Yeah,
she came on the podcast. Yeah. She came on. Yep, she came. She was there. She was, but also a lot of questions about race and ethnicity and about representation. So again, asking questions about getting birth families, getting adopted adults onto the board, and young people's voices. So it felt really lots of thinking about, well, how, if you get all of those people represented, then do you end up with this board that's just got dozens and dozens of people on? So just thinking about
that's a problem, isn't it?
How to do it, so it was good though. That I felt it was problem. Really positive. I built a snowman at lunchtime.
I was just going to say, just before your snowman there, I'm surprised Beth managed in 4 minutes, because Beth's not the kind to be able to just do something.
What are you saying about Beth for? Why are you put?
I'm not saying anything. Casting? I'm just saying 4 minutes isn't long for our Beth, is it? She's
no,
the show. I'm not slagging her off. I'm just saying.
No, I would punch you on the nose if you were to say anything untoward about any of our guests.
In the nose. Anyway, yeah, I don't say anything. I love all our guests. You know I do.
Speaking of facial features, your beard is massive.
It is huge, isn't it? Yeah, I'm leaving it.
Are you just going to keep going?
Until all this is over. Yeah, until this is all over. So right now, my chin is double the size. So from my top lip to my chin is the same as double. No, sorry. Rewind. From my bottom lip to the bottom of my beard is double. Double what it is from my bottom lip to my...
So what are you actually trying to say?
I don't know what I'm trying to say. It's long. Let's put it that way. Okay?
The beard is bushy. The beard is very bushy.
Yes, it is. And it's longer if I pull it as well, which is interesting. It probably goes to like another third. But
there you go.
Everybody's having a go at me about it. I don't care. Right?
Newsflash.
I don't have to go anywhere. Yeah. And people keep on sending Tris messages saying, get the scissors out, get the clippers out. No, thank you. If you did that, there would be an issue in our relationship if he started touching my facial hair.
Do you touch my beard, you filthy beast. Probably in our final
note. People are saying, we'll send you some clippers in the post. No, you don't need to. I do all of their hair. I have my own clippers. I have my own beard trimmers. You know, No, it's fine. I don't need
We've slipped into male grooming, which is when we know we're well off into the long grass. Yeah. That whole shavy beard thing is a bit...
It's boring. It's so 19...
You've turned yourself off. You muted yourself in bizarre. I don't know. The final thing is that we have just tipped over the 100 people coming to our challenging violent aggressive behaviour doodah, and which we are just gobsmacked by. We've actually run a small wager between ourselves, haven't we, over how many we're going to get now. So we'll have to agree on the stakes. How many? Because it looks like I'm on to win, doesn't it? So what? You know, we should have agreed that beforehand. I said 7, and you said 13, and you know we smashed that. No, just being facetious. No, we've got people coming. Well, fantastic.
The point is, we didn't want it to be too big, but somehow it's just managed to become a thing again.
It doesn't feel too big yet.
It does to me.
All right, okay, fair enough.
Like bearing in mind the conference in November was, you know, we had guest speakers and they were amazing. And, you know, why would... Yeah, I mean, well, I guess the clue's in the numbers, because only 100 people want to come and see us.
I absolutely hate that. Why would people want to come and speak to you? That's a stupid thing to say, because you're... Oh, anyway, But let's not fall out on the podcast. Let's do that behind the scenes.
Yes,
that's a crazy thing to say. Crazy, you know, if the way you think is you've got to think, you don't give people permission to say that you're rubbish because you're not rubbish. Anyway.
Oh, whatever.
Whatever.
Anyway.
So what are you doing this week?
Whatever.
What are you just doing whatever?
It's Groundhog Week. The same as I did last week. Very little.
Very little. It's half term next week, so I'm going to take a few days off and do nothing.
Oh, yes, it is half term. To be fair, we're waiting on the keys to this apartment. And it's half term next week, so it's not going to be Groundhog Week. But we're still in lockdown, so... Yeah. Nothing's going to... It's actually going to be worse.
Same old, same old. Same old, same old.
If we get the keys to our new place, then we will be able to travel a little bit further than what we have been with kind of cleaning products and paint and things.
Oh, you won't say to Tris, I'm just popping at the shops and then go and have an afternoon in the apartment, lie down.
Exactly.
We'll do. Yeah. Oh, I lost track of time.
Oh, why are you taking the coffee maker with you?
And the duvet and a mattress.
Yeah.
No, nothing.
Oh,
nothing.
Dear, yeah. No, nothing, dear. Yeah.
Dark. Champion. Right. Well, I'm going to shoot off. I've got things to do, people to see.
You've got sheep to herd, haven't you?
Well, yeah, it's a bit scary now because bless Esther, she's...
It could be one of those Del Boy and Rodney moments where, was that a goat or something that they had? And I don't know, I can't remember, but it was just like this sheep or this goat followed them everywhere. That could be your new life. You could wake up in the middle of the night with a sheep looking at you on the side of the bed.
nothing would surprise me anymore. Can I tell you this story about when the hamster got loose?
No, you didn't.
So, it was 3:21 in the morning, and Lottie came in. She went, oh, because she talks like this, and she's got her own accent. She went, oh, Dad, you know how I've got a hamster, and how I got a hamster for Christmas, and it was really lovely, and I love a hamster, and my hamster's brown, and my brown's white. And she started to tell me about the hamster, and she was going on about how she got a hamster for Christmas, and I was going, you know when you're deep sleep, and I went, what do you want, Rosa? I've just told her name. There's Rosa anyway. Lottie, Rosa. Yeah. And she went, oh, it's got loose. It's got loose in my bedroom. And I went, I don't care. So at 7 o'clock in the morning, I came back in and we got it out. But just, it's just these odd children bring, no wonder relationships crack up. 3 o'clock in the morning, I couldn't get back to sleep. So.
Have you ever watched the program Thingy and Perry? Harry Enfield and Kathy Burke. That's who Lottie sounds like.
Oh, she's so like that. She hasn't got a Geordie accent, and she hasn't got an accent from where she's from. She's just developed a totally unique accent.
Her own.
Absolutely.
Which, to be fair, for her age, that's absolutely acceptable because it's all about individuality at that age, isn't it? You know,
she came up to, at the weekend. She came up to him. She went, Dad, you know how I'm your prettiest daughter? And I went, whoa, you can't ask me that question. And she went, we know it's true, don't we? We know it's true, don't we? I said, I'm not answering that question. She went, no, it's true. You know it's true. We know it's true. Everyone knows it's true.
She probably had her phone on record ready.
And I went, but even if you might be the prettiest of my children, your insides are rotten. And she went, yeah, but when I'm walking down the street, no one can see that.
Wow. Self-awareness, eh?
Yeah, bless her. She's getting terrifying. Anyway, enough of my daughter and her antics and accents.
Or shenanigans. Well,
I'm going to go.
Fabulous. I'm going to go as well.
Yeah, excellent. Well, have a fantastic week.
I'm going.
Yeah. Well, have a fantastic week. And I hope that all your dreams come true.
Yeah, fabulous.
Bon Jovi.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Anchovy.